All right, we're continuing. Chapter 8 of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. And they just encountered good old Winky. Here we go. Ron pulled out his omnioculars and started testing them, staring down into the crowd on the other side of the stadium. Wild, he said, twiddling the replay knob on the side. I can make that old bloke down there pick his nose again, and again, and again. Hermione, meanwhile, was skimming eagerly through her velvet-covered, tasseled program. A display from the team mascots will precede the match, she read aloud. Oh, that's always worth watching, said Mr. Weasley. National teams bring creatures from their native land, you know, to put on a bit of a show. The box filled gradually around them over the next half hour. Mr. Weasley kept shaking hands with people who were obviously very important wizards. Percy jumped to his feet so often that he looked as though he were trying to sit on a hedgehog. When Cornelius Fudge, the Minister of Magic himself, arrived, Percy bowed so low that his glasses fell off and shattered.
Oh no.
Highly embarrassed, he repaired them with his wand, and thereafter remained in his seat, throwing jealous looks at Harry, whom Cornelius Fudge had greeted like an old friend. They had met before, and Fudge shook Harry's hand in fatherly fashion, asked him how he was, and introduced him to the wizards on either side of him. Harry Potter, you know, he told the Bulgarian minister loudly, who was wearing splendid robes of black velvet trimmed with gold and didn't understand a word of English. Harry Potter, oh come on now, you know who he is. The boy who survived, you do know who he is. The Bulgarian wizard suddenly spotted Harry's scar and started gabbing loudly and excitedly, pointing at it. Knew he'd get there in the end, said Fudge wearily to Harry. I'm no great shakes at languages. I need Barty Crouch for this sort of thing. Ah, I see his house elves saving
him. Is that his name Marty Crouch?
Barty.
Barty?
Barty. Like Bart.
I gotcha. How is Bart?
I don't know, I haven't talked to him in a bit. Oh, God. Everyone.
Yep. Okay.
I see his house elves saving him a seat. Good job, too. Those Bulgarian blighters have been trying to cadge all the best places. And here's Lucius. I thought they had tickets for specific spots. Right?
I thought so, too.
I wonder if they have tickets. They must have tickets for a section.
Oh, yeah.
And then they can sit wherever. Anyways, Harry, Ron, and Hermione turned quickly, edging along the second row to three still empty seats right behind Mr. Weasley, were none other than Dobby, the house elf's former owners, Lucius Malfoy, his son Draco, and a woman Harry supposed must be Draco's mother. Harry and Draco Malfoy had been enemies ever since their very first journey to Hogwarts. A pale boy with a pointed face and white blonde hair, Draco greatly resembled his father. His mother was blonde, too. Tall and slim, she would have been nice-looking if she hadn't been wearing a look that suggested that there was a nasty smell under her nose. Ah, Fudge, said Mr. Malfoy, holding out his hand as he reached the Minister of Magic. How are you? I don't think you've met my wife, Narcissa, or our son, Draco. Ah, how do you do, how do you do, said Fudge, smiling and bowing to Mrs. Malfoy. And allow me to introduce you to Mr. Well, he's the Bulgarian Minister of Magic, and he can't understand a word of what I'm saying, so never mind. And let's see who else. You know Arthur Weasley, I dare say. It was a tense moment. Mr. Weasley and Mr. Malfoy looked at each other, and Harry vividly recalled the last time they'd come face to face. It had been in Flourish and Blot's bookshop, and they had had a fight. Mr. Malfoy's cold gray eyes swept over Mr. Weasley, and then up and down the row. Good Lord, Arthur, he said softly. What did you have to sell to get seats in the top box? Surely your house wouldn't have fetched this much. Fudge, who wasn't listening, said, Lucius has given a very generous contribution to St. Mungo's Hospital for Magical Maladies and Injuries, Arthur. He's here as my guest. How nice, said Mr. Weasley, with a very strained smile. Mr. Malfoy's eyes had returned to Hermione, who went slightly pink, but stared determinedly back at him. Harry knew exactly what was making Mr. Malfoy's lip curl like that. You know, I was just thinking, it would be, like, I know that it's probably hard to do, but they all react to the Malfoys, like, angrily, right? Mm-hmm. They, like, stare at them and stuff like that. What if they just smiled and were very polite? Right? Wouldn't that piss the Malfoys off?
I think that they are polite to them.
No, but I mean, like, overly polite. Because, like, listen, they're staring. They're all... They've got these icy stares at each other. You know?
I want to go to bed. So.
Okay. The Malfoys prided themselves on being purebloods. In other words, they considered anyone of Muggle descent, like Hermione, second class. However, under the gaze of the Minister of Magic, Mr. Malfoy didn't dare say anything. He nodded sneeringly to Mr. Weasley and continued down the line to his seats. Draco shot Harry, Ron, and Hermione one contemptuous look, then settled himself between his mother and father. Slimy gits, Ron muttered as he, Hermione, and Harry turned to the field again. The next moment, Ludo Bagman charged into the box. "Everyone ready?" he said, his round face gleaming like a great excited Edom. "Minister, ready to go?" "Ready when you are, Ludo," said Fudge comfortably. Ludo whipped out a wand, directed at his own throat and said, "Sonorous," and then spoke over the roar of the sound that was now filling the packed stadium. His voice echoed over them, booming into every corner of the stands. "Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Welcome to the final of the 422nd Quidditch World Cup." The spectators screamed and clapped. Thousands of flags waved, adding their discordant national anthems to the racket. The huge blackboard opposite them was wiped clear of its last message, and now showed Bulgaria 0, Ireland 0. And now, without further ado, allow me to introduce the Bulgarian national team mascots. The right-hand side of the stands, which was a solid block of scarlet, roared in its approval. "I wonder what they've brought," said Mr. Weasley, leaning forward in his seat. "Ah," he suddenly whipped off his glasses and polished them hurriedly on his robes. "Vila. What are Vila?" But 100 Vila were now gliding out onto the field, and Harry's question was answered for him. Vila were women, the most beautiful women Harry had ever seen, except that they weren't. They couldn't be human. This puzzled Harry for a moment, while he tried to guess exactly what they could be. What could make their skin shine moon-bright like that, or their white-gold hair fan out from behind them without wind? But then the music started, and Harry stopped worrying about them not being human. In fact, he stopped worrying about anything at all. The Vila had started to dance, and Harry's mind had gone completely and blissfully blank. All that mattered in the world was that he kept watching the Vila, because if they stopped dancing, terrible things would happen. And as the Vila danced faster and faster, wild, half-formed thoughts started chasing through Harry's dazed mind. He wanted to do something very impressive right now. Jumping from the box into the stadium seemed a good idea, but would it be good enough? "Harry, what are you doing?" said Hermione's voice from a long way off. The music stopped. Harry blinked. He was standing up, and one of his legs was resting on the wall of the box. Next to him, Ron was frozen in an attitude that looked as though he were about to die from a springboard.
Oh, I just love it.
Angry yells were filling the stadium. The crowd didn't want the Vila to go. Harry was with them. He would, of course, be supporting Bulgaria. And he wondered vaguely why he had such a large green shamrock pinned to his chest. Ron, meanwhile, was absently mindedly shredding the shamrock on his hat. Mr. Weasley, smiling slightly, leaned over to Ron and tugged the hat out of his hands. "You'll be wanting that," he said, "once Ireland have had their say." "Huh?" said Ron, staring open-mouthed at the Vila, who had now lined up along one side of the field. Hermione made a loud, tutting sound. She reached up and pulled Harry back into his seat. "Honestly," she said. "And now," roared Ludo Bagman's voice, "kindly put your wands in the air for the Irish national team mascots." Next moment, what seemed to be a great green and gold comet came zooming into the stadium. It did one circuit of the stadium, then split into two smaller comets, each hurtling toward the goalposts. A rainbow arced suddenly across the field, connecting the two balls of light. The crowd oohed and awed, as though at a fireworks display. Now the rainbow faded, and the balls of light reunited and merged. They had formed a great shimmering shamrock, which rose up into the sky and began to soar over the stands. Something like golden rain seemed to be falling from it. "Excellent!" Ron yelled as the shamrock soared over them, and heavy gold coins rained from it, bouncing off their heads and seats. Squinting up at the shamrock, Harry realized that it was actually comprised of thousands of tiny little bearded men with red vests, each carrying a minute lamp of green or gold. They're almost like Packers. Leprechauns.
Do they get to keep the gold?
I hope so. Oh, you'll see.
Okay, go ahead.
This is almost like at a Notre Dame game.
Yeah, go ahead.
Leprechauns, said Mr. Weasley, over the tumultuous applause of the crowd, many of whom were still fighting and rummaging around under their chairs to retrieve the gold. There you go, Ron yelled happily, stuffing a fistful of gold coins into Harry's hand. For the omnioculars. Now you've got to buy me a Christmas present, huh? The great shamrock dissolved, and the leprechauns drifted down onto the field on the opposite side from the villa, and settled themselves cross-legged to watch the match. Should we stop here?
Yeah.
Or do you want to keep going?
What happened to the... Why did they get to keep
You'll see
gold?
At the end. You'll see at the end of the chapter, they say.
What do they think? Just tell me right now.
You like to know things.
Yeah.
I think the gold just disappears.
Aww.
And Ron gets, like, really sad. Harry doesn't care, because...
Yeah. Right?
But Ron gets really sad, because he thought he had paid Harry back.
Right.
And I think that... I can't remember, but I think Fred and George might do something with the gold before it disappears. Like, I don't know.
Oh, really?
I don't remember.
Oh, cool.
We'll see. But I'm pretty sure it disappears.
They probably, like, buy something with it.
Yeah, right.
They're so stuffy.
They are. Very cute. I love you so much.
Good night, self.
Good night, beautiful hairy kitten.
Hairy kitten.
Hairy kitten.
Ew.
You're not hairy. You're not hairy. Come here. You're a hairy kitten. Howie.
It's so cute.
He's catching. Yeah. I love you so much, dear.
Oh,
if you're listening to this later and you made it all the way through 13 minutes, I am very impressed. Because you probably didn't. And I love you so much. I want you to sleep well. Good night, please.